BeCure Laser is now available in the UK. To get your very special offer right now, just call 0808 501 5122.
Hello and thank you so much for joining me on the show today. This is the Diabetes Show on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. My name is Peter Alton of Undefeated and I'm your host for today and the coming weeks. Hello and welcome once again to the Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. I hope you have had a fantastic week. What an amazing month last month was. It was Keep Your Feet Month, helping prevent diabetes-related amputations. And this month is Diabetes Awareness Month. And of course, this coming week actually is extremely special, both on a personal level with my family, because my daughter, who has type 1 diabetes, my daughter Jasmine, you've heard her on this show before. It's her 21st birthday this coming Friday. And then on Saturday the 14th, of course, is World Diabetes Day also. So it's something, many things to celebrate. And of course, at the moment, we have to do it in a very weird way. I know my daughter's not too pleased about having a 21st birthday during lockdown here in the UK. And of course, the whole way we can celebrate World Diabetes Day also is very, very restricted or very altered, shall we say. It all has to be done online. Anyway, I've got a very special guest for us on the show this week to mark World Diabetes Day and Diabetes Month. He's a gentleman, a doctor from the United States. His name is Dr. Martin Abrahamson. He's got a book coming out soon, and he is a very, very knowledgeable guy, as I'm sure you will agree when you hear his interview. We are going to go straight into a song now, a song which he chose, and that is called Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and this version is sung by Catherine McPhee. And I think at this point in time, maybe because today they just announced that actually they may have a vaccine almost ready for COVID, maybe there is some light at the end of the tunnel. Maybe there is that end of the rainbow beginning to appear where actually we can get out of this horrendous time with COVID. Anyway, I hope you enjoy the song Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
When all the clouds darken up the skyway, there's a rainbow highway to be found, leading from your windowpane, just a step beyond the and drive. above the chimney tops, that's where you find me. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly, birds fly over the rainbow. Then why? Then oh, why can't I? If happy little bluebirds fly beyond the
That was, of course, the unmistakable Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And that version was sung by Catherine McPhee, as requested by our guest on the show today. You are listening to The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio. And our guest today is a very special gentleman, a doctor. He is Dr. Martin Abrahamson from the USA. He is a consultant at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, where he's also the Director of Continuing Medical Education. He is the previous Senior Vice President, Chief Medical Officer for the Joslin Diabetes Center, and also an Associate Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. So extremely well qualified, lovely guy, and welcome to the show, Dr. Martin Abrahamson.
Hello, Martin.
Hi, Peter, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
I'll just drink my fourth cup of coffee, having spoken to Sanjeev the other day.
Yeah, I've had a couple. I'm waiting for another one shortly, but I'm dry at the moment. No coffee.
Do you want to go and get one quickly? Or?
No. I had. I just finished. So, you know, I'll space it out a little bit.
So you're at home at the moment or the office?
I'm at home.
Home, okay, cool.
Yeah, most of my work is actually for the last 7 months I've been working from home. Virtual I've just started in the middle of August. I started going to see some patients in the office. Mm. And then I'm doing a hybrid, some in the office and then telehealth from home. So I go for a morning and then I come home. I don't stay the whole day.
There's not been much telehealth over here until now. And it's so much, it's changed things for the better in many ways. My daughter at the moment, my eldest one, my 24-year-old, has got suspected Lyme disease. I phoned up the out-of-hours surgery with her when she was staying with me 2 weeks ago. And it took me 10 minutes from getting the initial call through to the receptionist, phone call back from the GP, which we missed, called them again, another phone back from the GP. They said, let's see you virtually. Video link came through, went on the video link. Within 10 minutes from the initial call, she had the prescription on her phone, which would never have happened.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, I think telehealth is a huge, this one thing that this virus has done.
Yeah.
It's made people realize that telehealth is so important. You know, I've been talking for, I keep telling the story. 12 years ago, I gave a keynote at a meeting. And they said, you can choose whatever you want. And I chose to talk about the future of telehealth for diabetes.
Right.
And I just said, you know, the evidence is there. This is so powerful because you can connect with people between visits. You can keep them engaged. You know, you've got all, and the technology's advanced even further since that time, much further. So, you know, I don't know if your 20-year-old daughter uses any form of continuous glucose monitoring device.
Yes.
But you know, whether it's Freestyle Libre or Dexcom, I mean, we share that the patients share their data with us. Yeah. We pull it up. You have a video link. You can share the screen, as we know, and you can look at the data together and you can analyze it together and you can actually get a lot more out of a visit in a much shorter time and be more efficient than this old, you know, what I call the old fashioned way of having to come into an office all the time.
Yeah, I'm sure you know by now, a podiatrist, passionate about preventing amputations. And there's that bath mat that's been, I think it was it Canada or I think it's Canadian invention, where you stand on it and the temperature is taken and then that automatically gets related to your medical.
Yeah. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
So there's a lot we can do.
Yeah.
With telehealth.
Definitely.
And there's some things that you have to be in person for, like in your line of work. Yes, you can do the screening, you can stand on something, but if people need to have certain physical things attended to, no choice. It's just got to be done.
Yeah. But you can filter out so that you get the ones in the clinic who need it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. So what got you into doing this radio show?
Well, I suppose we could go back all the way back to, not really to when I was diagnosed with type 2, because I was diagnosed with type 2 probably 12, 13 years ago. And that was a journey up to that point. But even though I've seen gangrene and seen, you know, diabetic ulcers and treated them, it still wasn't scary enough for me to really do too much, which is crazy. It's, you know, you're going to denial and you all sorts. Then my daughter developed type 1. She was 11 at the time. And that was the wake-up call for me. Not for myself as much, but more for the fact of who would educate her on preventing. Because in podiatry, we wait for the problems to come in. You know, you don't go out and... It doesn't bring in money going out and teaching prevention. It's a thankless task in some respects. But I decided from then I needed to get out on the parapet and start making a noise. And I wrote my book, which you may have seen around or not. I don't know. It's called, my wife came up with a name. It's called Undefeated by Diabetes. Okay. So it's a layman's book. It's not technical. It's not scary in so much as I don't do gruesome stories. There's one gruesome story. That's it. The rest of it's, hopefully, layman's terms, hopefully inspiring and hopefully encouraging people to make a change. And I use what I call the diabetes sweet spot, which works on people getting knowledge, awareness of their risk, and then taking action. So we wrote the book, we launched it as a non-for-profit organisation over here, spent lots of time and effort trying to build things up and what have you. And in doing so, as quite often I think can happen from what I've heard, you take your eyes off your own business, and the business was sort of suffering a little bit. So then I had to take my eyes off Undefeated, and because we didn't have the money to be able to sort of employ people to do stuff for that. So it was a challenge. So anyway, so I started doing that, and the emphasis of Undefeated is to prevent amputations. And the way I see it, being in the diabetes sweet spot, is for not just for foot care management, but for general management as well. It's being in the safest possible place with your diabetes you can be. And for regarding the feet, one huge part of that is controlling your blood sugars as well as you can, reversing your diabetes if you can, being in that safest place with your blood sugars. So I decided, you know what? I didn't decide actually. My publisher from the book put me in touch with the CEO of this radio station, UK Health Radio, and he approached me and said, look, we hear you're really interested in diabetes and promotion that, how's about doing a show? Did that.
Great.
But then I started a second show, so I do two, the diabetes show and then the foot health show. So it's the two-pronged attack at trying to prevent amputations, if you like. So
good, that's terrific. Really terrific.
It's hard work. It doesn't get paid for, but yeah, hopefully it makes a difference.
Your passion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So one of the other things I do outside of all of this is I was asked to chair a steering committee to develop a whole program aimed at primary care physicians, teaching them diabetes.
Okay.
And you can look at the website. It's called Ascend, ASCEND.
Okay.
-diabetes-obesity.com, because they've now expanded into obesity.
Yeah, I need to.
there were a number of countries that were targeted for live meetings that started 3-4 years ago, as well as there's a whole online educational tool. And the online is free.
Okay.
But the there's a tremendous amount of education for primary care physicians.
Okay, cool.
That is included in that, in the online Ascend. It's Academy for Science and Continuing Education in Diabetes. It's all CME accredited.
Okay.
And the live meetings were also CME accredited. So it we got it was funded by an unrestricted grant from Novo Nordisk, but it's because it's CME, it's completely, you know, unbiased, and yeah. it's been ongoing. So it's been a terrific opportunity. But it's been, initially it was traveling to some of these countries. You know, we targeted China, India, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Peru, Mexico, Indonesia. What am I losing out on? There was a couple of other countries that were targeted to do these live programs and also to educate physicians to go out into their communities and continue the education.
Right.
So they were running the programs. We trained them and then they ran their own programs.
It was
so we reached a lot of physicians, but it's all about, you know, doing better management.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's just not, you can't do enough to engage patients as well as primary care physicians because they see the bulk of these patients.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you know. Yeah. You know, so it's one, you know, good for you.
So I reversed my diabetes so what happened initially was I put it into remission, reversed it, whatever you want to call it. And then I almost immediately, partly because the supermarket bread area smells so lovely, got back into bad ways really quickly.
Doesn't take long
at all. And then I, back in 20, well, I had another attempt at doing it, but that time I had real problems with, because it's a really low calorie diet, really had problems with constipation and what have you, and I just gave up on it halfway through. And then 2016, I decided I was definitely going to go for it. I'd spoken with, I don't know if you're familiar with Professor Roy Taylor and his work over here with the Newcastle Diabetes Reversal Diet. So I had spent some time with him anyway, and he, you know, shared some stuff with me, and I decided that I was going to do it again. I did it again, and that was 2016, and I crept back into pre-diabetes last year, and my doctor this year said, look, we're going to be putting you on meds soon. So at the moment I'm on a really low calorie diet again, with trying to get my weight down and blood sugars down. I've never got back to how I was. I'm pretty good.
You've gone silent.
Have I?
You've gone silent. Okay. Oh.
Can you hear me?
Now I can hear you.
All right.
You went silent for a second.
Okay. I'm not sure what that was. Okay. And where was I?
So you're taking medication or you're just doing diet?
I was taking medication before 2016. So I was taking statins, blood pressure and metformin before 2016 diet, and then came off all those and have been allowed to stay off them all because of the blood since. And the doctor, when I spoke to them about a month ago, was saying, you're going to be back on them again? So I said, no, I'm not going to be back on them, especially with COVID around. I mean, is it in the States, 40% of people have died of COVID are diabetic, I think I read somewhere. And the UK is 30%.
Yeah, that's that's an interesting thing, the diabetes and COVID, because it certainly looks like if you've got diabetes and you get COVID, the search across the board, the risk for having more severe, unequivocal. But if you break down those people who really had the severe COVID, there's a difference between those who are well controlled and those who are not well controlled.
Yeah,
and hyperglycemia in the hospital is a very strong predictor of outcome.
Right, okay.
And people with diabetes, if they came in and their sugars were good, well controlled, their mortality was, you know, roughly the same as those without diabetes.
When you say sugar control was good, at that point in time they went in? Because surely infection will...
It's more at the time of admission.
Right. Okay.
They try to correlate A1C, wasn't as good a correlation, but certainly, okay. I mean, here's the thing though, if you've got a high A1C and your sugars are out of whack, suddenly you're not going to get well controlled if you get admitted to hospital, because the chances are actually your sugars are going to get worse with hospitalization and with an infection.
Yeah, that's right.
So if somebody's got a good A1C and they, God forbid, get COVID, and they go into hospital and they're sort of, just even their fasting glucose, there was a correlation, was correlated well with outcome. So, you know, and there's other comorbidities too. So the hypertension and the obesity and the those are the things that are also independent risk factors for severity. But it is true. I mean, I tell my patients, I say to a lot of them, listen, now's your opportunity. Here's a wake-up call. You know, you don't want to get COVID, but at the same time, if you're going to get COVID, look, make sure you're well-controlled. Type 1 is a different story. So, you know, I've had a few patients with type 1 who got COVID. They did fine.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
Young people, well-controlled type 1, no real increased risk. Then as the age creeps up, so age becomes an independent risk factor, as we will. So it's
and poor control, no doubt.
Yeah. But again, I say to the people with type 1 diabetes, look, here's the chance. And a lot of people are home, they're not eating out, they're not running around, they're not, you know, their lifestyle can allow for more time for exercise if they really sort of put their minds to it.
I think there has been a sense from just sort of seeing in the park and whatever, there are a lot more people jogging now than there used to be. And
yeah.
Certainly.
But I think also the gyms have been closed.
Yeah, true.
You see a ton of people out walking
and
running. And, you know, again, gyms are closed, so people have had to make do. But I think also because people have been at home so much, they need to get out. So, again, weather permitting, and this is what's coming down our road, you know, when it hits December, January, February, and it really gets cold, it's going to be more challenging. And that's the problem with this virus as well. As it gets cooler, the numbers are going to start.
It can live longer as well, can't it, the virus on surfaces in the cold?
Yeah, they say so. They say so. Yeah. So anyway, do you exercise?
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah. I run. I'm laughing because I haven't been for a run for over a week. But generally, I do 2 or 3 5 to 10 Ks a week. I want to increase that. I've got a rowing machine which is sitting outside, and I tried it the other day. It still works, having not been used for about 3 years. I don't know how it works still because it's been in the rain and snow and everything. But I intend getting on that again. I haven't got a personal trainer at the moment. I did have a personal trainer before, but I'm thinking about getting another one again.
They do them on Zoom now.
Yeah. Well, actually, I say I haven't got one. I did actually, I am subscribed to one, South African guy.
Oh, really?
But I'm not really, it's more of an app. There's not really that much interaction with the person. It's not, it's not personal enough to keep me accountable, basically. So yeah. I think I need someone who will whip me.
Right.
But, what about yourself? What do you do?
Yeah, no, I try to do something every day.
Yeah.
So run a few times a week, bike, elliptical, free weights, core, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, good.
I've got in my basement, I've got a gym. So I've got a treadmill, I've got a bike, I've got an elliptical, I've got all the weights and things. I've got a TRX.
Right.
You know, those things that...
Yeah, yeah.
But keeps me busy.
Wow.
Okay. Got to do something every day.
I've got a treadmill as well, actually, which I use occasionally.
But I far prefer to be outdoors. If I'm going to run, I far prefer to get outdoors.
Yeah,
it's just, if the weather's nice, it's just gorgeous to be out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's when it's wet and dark. And the leaves are on the pavement masquerading with dog poop.
That's the problem. Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem. You got to do when it's light.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, anyway. All right. So, You sent me a ton of questions.
I did, yeah. I didn't mean to send you. Well, I didn't. No, I didn't mean to send you them all, but I didn't mean for it all today.
And
I, no, I mean,
I know we. And I'm, as I say, I'm more than happy if you want to, with time. I mean, we can set up some half-hour sessions if you want to. If it's going to help you with your show, that's terrific. I'm happy to do it.
Okay. I mean, yeah. Sanjeev spoke very highly of you, and I can tell.
How did you meet him?
I met him. I was introduced by Seshni Moodlai. I don't know if you know her at all. Seshni Moodlai. She's a psychiatrist over here, I believe. I don't know her that well. I was introduced to her by, I think, by the CEO of the radio station for an interview way back. She introduced me to him. And then he introduced me to you. And you've just written a book together, I believe.
Yeah, so we decided COVID came and he said, good idea, let's do a book. And I said, sure, because I've been talking about doing a book for a long time. But, you know, doing a book by yourself and or doing it with somebody else, there's a big difference. And so we brought complementary skills to the table. Mm-hmm. Of course, I've looked after people with diabetes for, what's it now, more than 30 years. Mm. And so we decided the book should be for the lay public. And cool. We used, used this kind of vehicle, Zoom, we did another program called Starleaf. But what we would do is every day, we each sort of took sections to write.
Okay.
And then what we did is we edited the sections together like this, except we shared the screen and typed along as we went.
Wow, cool.
Typed along as we went. So, and then it was suggested to us that we include a lot more stories of patients. Now, wow. I've got a lot of patients, a lot of stories. So, and he's got some patients where appropriate stories, people with liver disease and diabetes or, that kind of thing. So we've got in every chapter, we've included stories about patients. And the intention is that this should be an inspiration for people with diabetes.
Cool.
Because they are real stories about people who overcame a lot of adversity in many situations.
Yeah.
And I mean, the one story that I actually always quote, and in fact, she spoke at one of our continuing medical education meetings some years ago, was a lady who developed type 1 diabetes when she was 8. And I first met her when she was 73. And I took over her care. And I had the privilege of looking after her for another 17 years.
Wow.
So she just died earlier this year, 6 months after her 90th birthday.
Wow.
She'd had type 1 diabetes for 82 years.
Wow. And that's not 82 years of a CGM, is it? That's 82 years.
You well know.
Yeah.
In 1937, when she was diagnosed, 15 years after insulin had been discovered and produced, there was one kind of insulin made from pigs. There was no blood monitoring. There was no A1C.
Mm.
She knew there was no disposable needles, no disposable pens or syringes. the story of her life is really the story of the evolution of diabetes management for people with type 1 diabetes.
Right.
The only thing that she never did was she never went on a pump, but she embraced all the technological advances that were there, transitioning to analog insulins, transitioning to pens, transitioning to Freestyle Libre, the CGM, eventually, a couple of years before she died, but embracing all of these changes. And yet what she had at the beginning was something that is fundamentally important for anyone with type 1 diabetes or type 2 diabetes. And that was the discipline about nutrition and exercise, which she got from her mother, because her mother actually homeschooled her when she was diagnosed. She said, I'm looking after you.
Yeah.
And she recounted the stories of these huge long needles, wide bore. I had to reuse them, boil them, and sterilize them in the kitchen. How she had to test her urine with a thing called, do you remember Benedict's reagent? It was a special reagent they would add to the urine and then boil it with a Bunsen burner in the kitchen and see the color change. And if the colors changed a certain color, that meant you had a lot of sugar in your urine. If it didn't go to that color, there was less sugar in the urine. It was a colorimetric means in the urine of assessing your control. No blood monitoring until the 70s. So she had nearly 40 years of diabetes before she could do a finger stick.
Wow. That is unbelievable, isn't it? Well, it's not unbelievable, then, it really wakes you up to how lucky we are.
Yeah, she overcame a lot of adverse situations that she never, I mean, always quote the thing, she never gave up. Mm. She never did. And she was always upbeat and positive about her life, about what she did. She traveled the world. She traveled across the USA. She traveled to many parts of the world because her husband actually was an aeronautical engineer. And he had to go overseas a lot. She lived in the UK for a while. In fact, her first pregnancy was in the UK. She gave the story about how she had to go to King's College.
Great diabetes center there.
The urine in a milk bottle when she was to be evaluated. The story about how she, when she was overseas, she developed actually celiac disease. Doctors didn't know what the hell was going on. And eventually, they cottoned on. She had osteoporosis, so she broke limbs. She broke her leg once and had to drive across the United States to come home with a broken leg because they were on a driving trip. I mean, it was just, the story is just unbelievable. And then she took up curling at a relatively sort of advanced age. And then she represented the United States in a national curling championship.
No.
Yeah.
She was just
one remarkable woman. We had three children, all of whom, are alive and well.
Absolute legend. Yeah. Wow.
She's, she's probably, I don't have many people who've lived for 82 plus years with type 1 diabetes, but her story is just one of the most remarkable ones. But there's a lot of other stories about people that, illustrate some of the things we try to portray in the book, because we call the book Conquering Your Diabetes. Prevention, control, remission.
Cool.
Brilliant. And it's all about, it's exactly that.
Yeah.
So the evolution, people can prevent their diabetes. People can control their diabetes. Yeah. People can get their diabetes into remission. Type 2, you know full well, you just told me your story. So it's possible.
You know what? I know type 1 you can't put into remission as such, but obviously. But I'm a great believer and I feel that it really is important. People with type 1 sometimes, unlike the lady you just mentioned who was brought up knowing about nutrition and exercise and that's basically how she managed to survive all that time was because she was sensible but too many people I think get with type 1 sometimes obviously they've got pressures of all sorts hitting them but sometimes they can get into this mentality of I can eat what I want and I can inject, I can eat what I want and I can inject, and then on top of their type 1 it's as if they're getting insulin resistance, I guess. That's I don't know whether that's scientifically correct, but that's what appears to be the case, and then they've almost got like type 2 on top of type 1. But surely if they then manage to lose some weight, burn off some of the fat around the pancreas and the liver, well, the liver particularly, then surely they will be putting into remission that aspect of their morbidity. Is that?
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, I think part of the problem with people with type 1, as you say, is they say, well, I just take insulin and I can eat what I want, but you can't.
Mm.
Because truth be told, the way we give insulin is still not physiologic. And sorry, let me just get rid of that. The way we give insulin, it's not physiologic. We're giving it subcutaneously. We know that insulin is secreted into the portal system, first passed through the liver, and there's an instantaneous correlation. I mean, the instantaneous correlation, as soon as the blood sugar starts rising in the normal pancreas, there's insulin being secreted. So if you give insulin subcutaneously, it takes time to be absorbed, it has to match the food and so on. You see clearly with CGM in particular, and this is a, you know, the great teaching tool with CGM for patients, there's a huge difference in the type of carbohydrate that you eat in terms of what it's going to do to your glucose excursion.
Yeah.
And we're very aware now that big, you know, what I call peaks and valleys, and high excursions, high glucose variability can actually be responsible for the progression of complications, even if you have an A1C that's reasonable. So the picture is very simple. If you go from very low to very high and you average it out, it could be the same as somebody who's just going close to the mean on either side. And so the A1C doesn't tell the whole story. So, and what's driving the highs and the lows is I think this concept that, oh, I can just eat what I want. So I tell patients, just work it out. If you limit your carbohydrates, I think it's important to limit carbohydrates, not be excessive. B, watch the type of carbohydrate. You can actually reduce these peaks and valleys significantly. And whether you're using basal bolus therapy, whether you're using a pump, and we know now that, you know, the technology has advanced to the point that the pumps are hybrid closed loop. They talk to the CGM. That does help people give people a little bit more flexibility in terms of their eating, but it doesn't completely sort of exonerate them from not being aware of what they should eat. And also the benefit of exercise in improving sensitivity. Now, the second part of this type 2 component is with people gaining more weight, they do become more resistant to insulin. So that component of type 2 is present. And you this is obviously seen in people whose insulin requirements go up. So as the insulin requirements go up, if they lost weight, the insulin requirements come down. And then all the other components that go with insulin resistance, this increased predisposition to hypertension, dyslipidemia, and so on, can also be abrogated with just paying attention to nutrition and exercise. We know that also some people with type 1 diabetes can benefit from some of the drugs that we use to treat type 2, although they're not approved for type 1. So some people are now taking metformin. Some people use GLP-1 receptor agonists and even SGLT2 inhibitors, but they got to do that very carefully. And clearly, that's off-label.
It's a high dose, it might be.
So, but what's interesting about diabetes, as you well know, is that everybody that comes through the door is a different individual, is a unique individual, and the challenge is getting to know that individual. And the excitement about treating people with diabetes is actually getting to know the individual and developing what lifelong relationships with them. There was a very, very wise diabetologist, physician scientist, who unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago. His name is Aldo Rossini. And he told me, he told me, that he regards patients and relationships with patients as he is a friend who has a special knowledge that can help, a friend with a special knowledge. And that's true, because if you look after people for years and years and years, you get to know them, you get to know their family, you get to know a lot about them. And the other interesting thing, to sort of come back to the telehealth side of is when you do telehealth visits now with patients, you can actually see more into their life than you can if they're sitting in an office with you. I've got a particular patient with type 1 diabetes who is just passionate about gardening.
Okay.
And so when we did a telehealth visit recently, I said, show me your garden. And he was, wow, okay. So, and I saw his garden, things that he's I knew he'd passionate about garden. I've never seen his garden.
But
so there's a little thing about telehealth where you can actually get more of an insight into people that you've known for many years.
That's interesting because you generally think of it as being more remote and more removed from the person, but in actual fact, you're finding a way of drawing closer to them.
So that's the story. That's the coming back. That's the book. The book is more. Yeah. Hopefully, it will be published soon. But
any ideas when it will be available?
No idea yet.
No idea. Yeah.
But, you know, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will definitely promote it on here, and I will definitely get a copy. And
I'm going to look for your book. Is it your book on Amazon?
It should be on Amazon. Yes, it is on Amazon. I keep telling people on my Facebook Lives that it's available as paperback around the world. But I think there's actually a really cheap version on Kindle at the moment, which is like, we forgot to put the price back up again. So it's dirt cheap on Kindle. But yeah, it's been received well by people, you know, by punters, but also by some of the medical establishment, which I was encouraged by, because when I did it, I felt I wrote it from a very insecure place. You know, really, I really had to dig deep and believe in myself and my ability to write it, and the fact that actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was encouraging to have those heads up. So maybe for the next edition, I can have your endorsement of it as well.
Oh, pleasure.
But you haven't read it yet.
Happy to do that.
Thanks. It was translated into French and Arabic, but it was done. I was out in Algeria, and the British Lions out there, they offered to translate it for me on the basis of hearing me speak out there, which was nice, but they went through with it, but I think particularly the Arabic one is very localized to Arabic for Algeria, so it's not been properly published. So
actually, that's the other country where we ran this program.
Algeria?
They sent Algeria.
Okay. All right.
And we did Algeria. So that was the other country.
Okay. Did you meet any sort of...
I didn't go to all of them.
Okay.
So we had a committee that, you know, the first program actually was just bringing all the physicians from these countries into one site to show them the program, teach them. Then they went and they ran the programs in their countries. Very, very practical, hands-on type of program. Not a typical sort of lecture, learn, listen and learn. It was a case-based, engaged in little small group discussions and so on. But what would happen is that in the beginning, some member of the steering committee would go to the country to oversee the program initially.
Right.
And so we sort of split up the who would go where. But then after a while, they could do it themselves. And in a country like Algeria, where it's run in French, and if nobody can speak French, we relied purely on, you know, after the first one, the folks there were so good at it, they just did it themselves. And a group actually in London, a company called International Medical Press is the company that actually has put together the whole program.
Okay.
So they're using their technology, their software, and their sort of resources to put together all the content. You know, we provide the input, but they ultimately package the whole thing.
Right.
So, but it's been that's been a good experience.
Great. Good.
So we should do this again, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
let's figure out another time.
Okay, Dr. We'll liaise by email, yeah?
Yeah, sure. Great.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Martin. Take good care. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed meeting Dr. Martin Abrahamson there as much as I did in that conversation. We had planned to actually ask some specific questions and answer them, but we got into that sort of general chat, which I thought was worth airing for you because there was so much valuable stuff in there. But Martin has agreed that he will definitely be back on the show again, where we'll look at some specifics regarding type 1 diabetes and type 2 diabetes. And also, of course, he's got his book coming out soon as well. So I'll probably grill him on that and go through a little bit of it. Anyway, it was great to have him on the show. And he did choose a couple of songs. He chose the one we played earlier. And he also chose something by Michael Bublé, which we're going to listen to now. And the song that we chose is When I Fall in Love. So here it is, Michael Bublé and When I Fall in Love.
I fall in love, it will be forever, or I'll never fall in love. In a restless world like this is, love has ended before it's begun, and too many moonlight kisses seem to cool in the warmth of the sun. When I give my heart, it will be completely, or I'll never give my heart. And the moment I can feel that, you feel that way too, is when I fall in love with you.
And that is it for this week's show. You've been listening to Peter Alton with The Diabetes Show here on UK Health Radio, your global, real, feel-good radio station. All that remains is for me to say have a fantastic week. Stay safe in the diabetes sweet spot. living the ideal diabetic lifestyle. I look forward to sharing more with you next week. Take good care and God bless.